Friday, July 3rd, 2015. We're on study 60 of Genesis. And last week we were looking at Joseph in Egypt, then his marriage to the priest of On's daughter. And we're going to look now at chapter 41 of Genesis. As we continue on, looking at Joseph's life here. And in chapter 41 of Genesis, could someone get us started this morning by reading verses 50 through 52?
Before the years of famine came, two sons were born to Joseph by Asenath, daughter of Potipharah, priest of On. Joseph named his firstborn Manasseh and said, "It is because God made me forget all my trouble in my father's household."
And verse 52.
His second son, called Ephraim, said, "It is because God has made me fruitful in the land of my suffering."
Okay, thank you, David. So, verse 50 says, "Now, before the year of famine came." So, what preceded, or what has preceded this year of famine that's coming?
Over 6 years.
Yeah. They're in the sixth year of the seven-year harvest of unbelievable produce that Pharaoh dreamt about. He couldn't interpret the dream, and Joseph interpreted it and gave him advice as to how to deal with it. So now, right before the famine starts, we're told that Joseph, who is now married to this pagan priest's daughter, Asenath, he has a son, and the son's name is Manasseh, verse 51 tells us, and it's actually not, it's a Hebrew name, not an Egyptian name. And in Hebrew, Manasseh, the text tells us, means God has made me forget my trouble. So this is, again, an autobiographical statement by Joseph with regard to his son, his firstborn, Manasseh. So do you figure 7 years, 6 years, so the seven have gone by, plus, and then remember, Joseph, when he was elevated to the role of prime minister of Egypt, Genesis tells us he was about 30 years old, or he was 30 years old. Joseph's about 36, 37 right now. And number of years have gone by. He's got Manasseh now. And he also, verse 52, has a second son named Ephraim, another Hebrew name, and it means God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. Now, interestingly enough, in my study, I came across a really good psalm. When you think about all the things that have happened to Joseph, and this definitely was the land of his affliction. The Lord always uses affliction to correct us or to deepen our dependence on him. Let's take a little rabbit trail. Go to Psalm 119. And it's Psalm 119.
It's a long one. Wow.
Yeah. Could someone read verse 67?
Before I was afflicted, I went astray, but now I keep your word.
Okay. Thank you, Luke. So in this huge psalm, I found this little gold nugget in my study that reminded me of the fact, and this is, Joseph really never did anything to become afflicted, but this spoke to me because this is how I got to where I'm at now. Bless you. The verse says, "Before I was afflicted, I went astray, but now I keep your word." And the idea is that it was affliction that got the songwriter's attention. And was off in all kinds of weird directions, but affliction made them really focus, concentrate, and become dependent on God. And now the outcome is that the psalm writer, and I'm not sure if it's David or not, I don't think so, is now keeps the word of the Lord, is obedient to God. And let's come back to Genesis.
The word afflicted is an interesting word to try to apply here.
Yeah.
Because it has so many meanings, whether it's positive, negative.
Well, it's definitely suffering, right?
Yeah.
Suffering, something. And Joseph says here in back in Genesis chapter 41, God made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. So even though he was suffering because he was separated from his family, sold into slavery in a foreign land, removed from his family and friends, nonetheless, even in that posture, God blessed him, made him fruitful. And that is Ephraim. Now, again, just another aside. In the Bible, as you get into Joshua and Judges, you start to see the allocation of the land of Israel among the tribes of Israel. You'll notice that Joseph is never allocated any land. And it's because his two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, become proxies for the tribe represented by Joseph. You think, well, wow, so there's 13 allocations of land in the land of Israel. And that would be the case, but remember, Levi gets no allocation of land in the division of tribes. So there's still, when you add Joseph's two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim, with their allotments of land, and remove Levi, you have 12. So yeah, and I know that I was always confused about that. Why is Ephraim in here and Manasseh? They're not of the 12. And they're not, but they're sons of Joseph. So God places both of them as a proxy for Joseph later on in the Bible. Let's take a look at this next passage here. Could someone read verses 53 through 57?
Seven years of abundance in Egypt came to an end, and 7 years of famine began, just as Joseph had said. There was famine in all the other lands, but in the whole land of Egypt there was food. When all Egypt began to feel the famine, the people cried to Pharaoh for food. And Pharaoh told all the Egyptians, "Go to Joseph and do what he tells you." When the famine had spread over the whole country, Joseph opened the storehouses and sold grain to the Egyptians, for the famine was severe throughout Egypt. And all the countries came to Egypt to buy grain from Joseph because the famine was severe in all the world.
Okay, thank you, Jeff. So verse 53, 7 years of plenty, which had been in the land of Egypt, came to an end. Again, Joseph's about 37 years old at this point in time. Verse 54, the 7 years of famine start. And the Bible tells us that just as Joseph said. And remember, we talked about this idea that when Joseph interpreted Pharaoh's dreams, he had no real credibility, except for the fact that he'd interpreted the dreams of these other guys that were in Pharaoh's court, and it seemed to be that whatever he was saying was resonating with most of the guys in Pharaoh's court, because they're all saying, yeah, this sounds right. But he could have just been a false prophet. And now events are authenticating these prophecies or these predictions that Joseph has made. So he's probably gaining more and more credibility as time goes on. Wow, they've had 7 years of unbelievable abundance, more food than they know what to do with, they're storing it away, and now all of a sudden, just as Joseph has said in the time, famine hits. So Joseph, and actually I think this leads to verse 55. So in the land of Egypt was famished, people cried out to Pharaoh for bread, and Pharaoh basically tells the Egyptians what? Joseph's the guy. Joseph is the guy. I mean, he really has demonstrated and gained credibility. He's planned accordingly. And he even tells all the people of Egypt, not just to go to Joseph, but whatever he says to you, do it. Yeah, now that's a lot of delegated authority. That's a lot of delegated authority right there. And verse 56, when the famine was spread over all the face of the earth, Joseph did what he planned on doing. He opened the storehouses, and he sold food to the Egyptians when the famine was severe. Now, verse 57 says, the people of all the earth came to Egypt to buy grain from Joseph because the famine was severe in all the earth. Interestingly, they came to Egypt, but they're buying grain from this Jewish kid who's now 37 years old. And when it says people of all the earth, the Hebrew word is Eretz, which really just means, it doesn't necessarily mean the globe, so you don't have people from, you know, Alaska, you know, trying to get back to Egypt. It pretty much means the vicinity. But nonetheless, with regard to Joseph and his planning and his interpretation, God's revealing to Joseph this dream and it becoming a source of physical survival for all the people in this land. It's reminding us, I think, of John 4:22 in the Gospels. John 4:22 tells us, "You worship what you do not know, we worship what you know, what we know, for salvation is from the Jews." The Bible tells us that salvation is from the Jews. And we thank you for our Jewish Messiah, the King of Israel, Jesus of Nazareth.
Isn't this double-dipping?
Go ahead.
Because for the last 7 years, we've been taxing them and taking your resources.
Exactly.
Now I'm going to sell it back to you at a huge profit.
As it progresses, it's even more double-dipping.
Yeah, I think you're right.
What does that mean for us?
Watch your health care. Social Security's taxed if you make it.
That's a good point. I mean, you get Social Security out, and then they tax it when it comes back to you.
I would just say that it's unnatural for most people to save money, and so the government in this case is doing it for them, or directly God is really doing it, and so they're charging a fee to do it. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
And this is kind of hybrid. When the Bible makes statements like, all the people came, you know, I'm sure it doesn't mean every single person came. I mean, so I've got to believe that there were some people in Egypt that maybe had some storage on their own. But just like any community, you know, people are living for today. Yep. And some people ended up at the end of the road, I got nothing, and so I'll sell you whatever I got for food.
Chris, it also doesn't say that although they may have some amount of grain, they're selling the grain, which assumes that those people saved enough money during the
years
of abundance to be able to buy the grain back that was taxed to them. What happens if they have no money? And more importantly, they're not only selling it to the people of Egypt, which have supplied the grain, but they're selling
exporting
the grain
to
other countries and other people or anyone that wants to come in.
It's true.
And to begin with, they only took 1/5 of the grain that supposedly lasts 7 years, and that doesn't work. So there's something really wrong with this program. Is there more to this?
Well, so we're going to see that later on, that it's the gouging idea that Paul brought up, or is Joseph gouging? The Pharaoh basically is able to buy up most of the private lands of Egypt because of this.
All the animals and all the land.
Yeah, so whatever is going on, it has, you know, it's just...
Pharaoh's filling his pockets.
Yeah.
He taxed him, and now he's getting the money.
And why is Pharaoh being blessed?
Joseph.
And that's right. Remember the first cut? Take a look at your outline. And this is covenant number 4, which is the Abrahamic covenant. I will bless those who bless you and curse those who curse. This is an outworking of the Abrahamic covenant.
Is there any indication that the general public had any awareness of what was going on? That the king was told this information?
Yeah, you know what? So they didn't have CNN and stuff like that back then, Richard, but I got to imagine there was some kind of network of communicating, you know, by letter or orally. And yeah, I would imagine that maybe these people were generally aware that this foreigner is running the country now. He's got this weird foreign dude. This Henry Kissinger. Nixon's got Henry Kissinger running the show here. And so, I got to suspect people were kind of generally aware.
They would have to because, with the having them to get, or the farmers to give back to the government like what they did, because they obviously didn't have that before Joseph came into the play.
Sure, yeah.
So there had to be some sort of idea of what was going on and what they were doing and why they were doing it.
And remember the description is famine. I mean, it is like a historic famine. So it's really severe. And there's probably a lot of foreign lands where people are dying like crazy. Egypt might be the only country where people are actually able to, are surviving because they've planned accordingly.
And I think you can't come down hard on Pharaoh here because this is Joseph who's doing this. It's Joseph that's buying the land of the people, not Pharaoh. He's doing it on behalf of Pharaoh. And God is directing Joseph. So, I mean, that's what's going on here.
Well, and the bigger picture is,
who's ultimately going to be blessed? His family.
It's a way to protect Israel. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's take a look at the next chapter here. We're now on chapter 42 of Genesis. And in chapter 42, could someone read for us verses 1 through 5?
Now Jacob saw that there was grain in Egypt. And Jacob said to his sons, "Why are you staring at one another?" He said, "Behold, I have heard that there is grain in Egypt. Go down there and buy some for us, that buy us from that place so that we may live and not die." Then 10 brothers of Joseph went down to buy grain from Egypt. But Jacob did not send Joseph's brother Benjamin with his brothers, for he said, "I'm afraid that harm may befall him."
Perfect. Thank you. And then verse 5 says, "So the sons of Israel came to buy grain among those who were coming, for the famine was in the land of Canaan also." So you've got here in verse 1, as Walter mentioned, you got foreign nations, other people groups, seeing that, wow, Egypt has got food, even though this famine is so severe. And Jacob says to his sons, "Why are you staring at one another?" Now, some commentators, and I don't know whether you can take this from the scripture or not, but it's an interesting thought. Some commentators say that the brothers staring at one another is a response to Dad, Jacob, raising the topic of Egypt. And so the commentators say, what do you think comes to the mind of the brothers once Dad talks about Egypt?
Joseph.
Yeah, their guilt.
That's what
Ooh, wow. And it's been 20 years now, 20 years yeah. since they've sold Joseph into slavery. And
did they know where Joseph was going when they sold
him? Well, that's a great question. They saw a caravan, and they saw these folks from Ishmael's tribe going mm-hmm. back to Egypt, and so they probably figured that he was on his way to Egypt after they got sold. Right. So we don't know for sure that they knew, but it's probably a good idea that they knew.
That's probably where you get the highest price for him.
That's a good point. Yeah, market condition. Yeah, it's the biggest empire in the world. They're going to get the highest price there.
And one of the other issues is that they're sitting around. It sounds like that they're just sitting around, according to what it says. Why do you look at one another? Like it's
do something.
It's
get like, off your butts.
I don't know whether it's because the famine was so severe in the area where they were at that they maybe lost all their sheep or lost all their livestock and everything else, so that all they're doing is sitting around going, "Woe is me," and all that kind of stuff, instead of getting off their butts and trying to go ahead and produce something.
Yeah.
Well, there were a lot of other folks that were dependent on Jacob and the brothers. Yeah. And there was
exactly right. They're just there's probably another 5 to 6 people to maybe 10 people to every person, male and.
I never understood why he had to send all 10 for the story to work for Joseph to be able to have all his brothers that sold him in one place.
That's a good question.
Why did 10 have to go when 5 could have gone?
It's a great question.
Bring a lot more back.
Yeah, good point. It may be that just to cart the stuff, to cart the storage stuff to get more chow back, but that's a good question. He keeps one behind, and we're going to read about that in a second.
Yeah. Well, Chris, and one of the other issues is because of the famine was so great, there was probably a lot of robbers and everything else that you go out.
Could be.
Buy the grain and all that stuff, and on your way back and everything that you could.
And at least once these guys get to Egypt, they can eat. They don't have to wait till someone brings it back, too. So, there's.
And these guys were a rough and tumble group, especially Reuben. And his group guy. So you send all the guys down there to protect each other, kind of. And the other thing, too, is, as you just said earlier, they're all sitting around watching each other. So why the heck not send them all? They're just sitting around with nothing to do.
That's a good point.
In Acts 7.
Uh-oh.
Acts 7, verse 12, it says, "But when Jacob heard that there was grain in Egypt, he sent our fathers." Why doesn't it say his sons?
Because who's speaking in Acts 7?
Oh, Paul.
Yeah, who's Paul's father?
Okay, thank you.
All the patriarchs.
Yes.
That's the fathers of Israel. Okay, so...
I can hear he's good. I'll tell you what.
I couldn't figure that one out.
Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah, no problem. So we've got here in 42, chapter 42, verse 1, why he's starting each other, get down and buy, verse 2, buy some from Egypt so that we may live and not die. And you've got, as Bill said, 10 brothers of Joseph went down to buy grain, but Jacob would not send Joseph's brother, Benjamin. Now, aren't they all Joseph's brothers?
Brothers,
that's exactly Benjamin right. They're all brothers, but Benjamin is the only brother by who?
Rachel.
Yeah, his Jacob's favorite.
Do you think Jacob, because mine in my Bible is in quotations, I'm afraid that harm may befall him. Now, why would he say that?
Why do you think?
Because of Joseph.
Yeah.
Because his first son that came from Rachel disappeared. Killed,
right.
Whatever.
So who, now let me ask you a question. Who was Joseph with when all this went down?
His brothers.
Yeah. So what do you think is going on in Jacob's mind?
Exactly. So he's saying, I'm not going to have my son go down with the other boys.
This seems to indicate that Jacob may have had suspicions this whole time as to what happened to his son Joseph.
Okay.
He isn't Joseph's brothers.
Yeah, Jacob may be thinking that these guys are somehow responsible.
Exactly.
I mean, that's what I take out of this, too.
Is yours in quotation marks, too?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's basically the quote from Jacob.
Okay.
And so, verse 5, the sons of Israel come to, they go down to Egypt, and because the famine's so severe. Let's go on to the next passage here. Could someone read verses 6 through 9?
Now, Joseph was the governor over the land, and he was sold to all the people of the land. And Joseph's brothers came and bowed down before him, with their faces to the earth. Joseph saw the brothers and recognized them, but he did not acted as a stranger to them and spoke roughly to them. Then he said to them, "Where do you come from?" And they said, "We come from the land of Canaan to buy food." So Joseph recognized the brothers, but they did not recognize him. Then Joseph remembered the dream which he had dreamed about them, and said to them, "You are spies. You have come to see all the nakedness of the land."
Okay, perfect. Thanks, Rod. So, interestingly, what does the Bible say in verse 6?
It's the governor.
Yeah, Joseph was the ruler over the land. Yeah, does some of you say something different than the ruler?
Governor.
Okay. So the idea is that even though Pharaoh is the titular head of the government, Joseph's the de facto ruler. He's the one with the power.
Yep.
But nonetheless, you would think that other people, and most people in history have done this, when they have that much power, they're going to launch a coup.
Mm-hmm.
Joseph never does that. Joseph is always respectful of his role, and he's obedient to God and the authorities that God's placed him within, even if they're pagan. Joseph's rule over the land, and the brothers come down, and what do the brothers do when they see Joseph?
They bow down to him.
Yeah, now what do you think that reminded Joseph of? Remember 20 years earlier?
The dream.
Joseph shared a couple of dreams with his brothers, which made him very unpopular with these guys. And one of the dreams was that the sheaths of the produce would bow down to the most fruit, the one sheath. And that now we have, it may take a while. God gives you something,
yeah.
You know, and it doesn't happen right away. There's a lot of times you might think this is just crap. Yeah. This is not real. There's a lot of times to lose faith. And you got to imagine Joseph sold him. Here's his dream. This has got it from God. Proud of the dream, excited about it. Brother sell him into slavery. He's put into a house in Egypt. The wife tries to accuse him of rape. He goes into a dungeon. I mean, you've got to be thinking, God's tricked me.
Mm-hmm.
But 20 years later,
here it is.
He's on top of the world, literally. And this dream that God gave him 20 years early is coming to life right before him. I'll give you an experience that I've had. You know, when we got married, my wife and I got married, we were really of the belief that God gave both of us a word and or a vision that we would have a child. Mm-hmm. We spent a lot of time without children and with no hope of children. And I still remember this day, me in my bed at 2 o'clock in the morning, waking up to the howls of sorrow of my wife in the loft upstairs, bitter, crying, and thinking, my God, the pain, and what do I do? That's when you start to think, maybe this vision wasn't real. Maybe, you know, maybe this word wasn't real. But lo and behold, out of nowhere, boom, we got two out of that womb. And so sometimes it takes a while when God gives you something, but if it's of him, he's going to come through. Amen. It's just a matter of what's the timing.
But you have to also recognize he's given it to you.
Amen.
And sometimes you don't until something happens later. You said, I really could have blown that, but I didn't.
Sure.
You talk about Pharaoh's faith in Joseph, he's not going to come against him. You think he gets to understand the whole story of what happened at Potiphar's home and stuff like that?
It's a great question.
Because remember, Potiphar was a high guy in the...
he was his head of the Secret Service.
Oh, yeah. Secret Service, right, yeah.
If I had to guess, I would say no, Bill, maybe just to preserve the integrity of his wife, but who knows? Who knows? We know that Potiphar wasn't out there to try to justify Joseph while he rotted in prison. So
he might just a revelation.
Just keep things quiet, and like, you know, Joseph's doing well on his own, but this God he served blessed me, now he's blessing him. So right. Let him roll with it. I'm speculating. So we got here, verse 7, Joseph saw his brothers, and he recognized them. Why didn't they recognize him in verse 7?
Egyptian.
Yeah, he disguised himself and spoke to them harshly. And I think, Paul, maybe you're right, maybe it wasn't a purposeful disguise, but he looked Egyptian, I think. Yeah, which he probably had a shaved head and makeup. And, you know, he was only 17 years old at the time. He's, you know, 37, so he probably looks a lot different. And most of his brothers were adults, so they probably didn't change in their appearance that much. Right.
And obviously, this name was not Joseph.
No, yeah, not at all. It was another, when we even talked about it, it was some other foreign god's name. That's right, they weren't.
How many years did he spend in prison? Wearing a Pharaoh.
That's true, yeah. That's exactly right. Yeah, and you're not getting four, you know, three squares in Comcast in that Egyptian prison either. You know, you're definitely, you're atrophying. And he said to them, where did he come from? They said, land of Canaan, buy food. Verse 8, Joseph recognized his brothers. They didn't recognize him. 9, Joseph remembered the dreams which he had about them. Now, why does Joseph start to turn on these guys? He says at the end of verse 9, he accuses them of being spies. What do you think's going on here?
Playing with them.
Yeah, I think, Bill, you know, people have, this is debated. This gets debated forever. What is Joseph's motives? Is God telling them to do this or is he doing it? And in my mind, I think you're right. I think it's simple cat and mouse. You know, when the cat gets the mouse, before he takes him down, he just kind of spent a little time playing with him. This Joseph may be very, I mean, imagine what's going on. We see that he's going to weep a number of times. The flood of emotion, the idea that God finally came through. These are his brothers. There's probably a lot going on here.
He may not know. At this time, what he's going to do.
It's true, yeah. Just, who knows?
I would also call him a master negotiator. I mean, he's been just doing deals all day long for I don't know how long here. And even when he worked for the military guy. So this may just be part of his protocol for initiating a bargain or a transaction, which is what he's going to.
Yeah. I believe it's a little bit of anger.
Yeah, suffice it to say, no one really knows what Joseph's motives are here, but he does begin this game of intrigue.
I tell you, I was working on my master's at Georgia Tech and doing my thesis and so forth. And at the, you know, I had everything done. And at the very end, one of the members of my my three-person committee, just put me through some loops. And I went right, you know, I did everything for about 2 days that he wanted me to do, add a little stuff, do a little bit, you know, do a couple more little charts and stuff. And I knew that he was just playing with me, and he had the authority and so forth. But did it, gone. So it wouldn't.
Hazing.
Yeah. Well, but had I been I'd been out of undergraduate school at that time 13 years. And had just been in the Army's Command General Staff School and so forth. I knew what he was doing. But a fresh kid that was in, fresh out of college and not had that time that I had. I mean, he might have resented. I understand. I just did, did it.
Smart. Smart.
Well, he's having that conversation maybe in hopes that they might reveal something to him.
About, could be.
You know, his family, what was going on.
Could
maybe
be.
Maybe even mention his name. In fact, somewhere they do mention, I think, that he had a brother.
Yeah, it's, I think I know when I got out of school, it was a time of the recession, and I remember, the big thing for campus interviews was called the stress interview. Mm-hmm. And the idea was four or five guys from the employer would sit in a dark room and say, 3.8, this is all you can do, and start screaming at you to see how you would react. maybe that's kind of the idea that, just to see how these people just give them more information.
See, I'm just thinking because God was with Joseph so much and throughout the whole process and everything else that, it goes along with a lot about what Richard was saying as far as he recognized him. He knew that he was their brothers, okay, but this 20-year period has passed. He doesn't know anything about his brothers or his father or his mother or, Benjamin or anything like that and everything. So it's a way, and obviously we're going to read it further down and everything, but all the semantics that he puts his brothers through.
Yeah, I think you're right, Rod. I think especially when we get to the part where they serve the food, I think that there may not be any malicious motive. It's a testing. I think a lot of this is testing.
Right.
And you know what? Guess who else has been tested in this whole process? Joseph. So, it's not like it goes downhill, but nonetheless, this is what Joseph dealt with too, so.
Yeah, once bitten, twice shot.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, so could someone read for us verses 10 through 17?
Now, my Lord, they answered, your servants have come to buy food. We are all sons of one man. Your servants are honest men, not spies. No, he said to them, you have come to see where our land is unprotected. But they replied, your servants were 12 brothers, the sons of one man who lived in the land of Canaan. The youngest is now with our father, and one is no more. Joseph said to them, it is just as I told you, you are spies. And this is how you will be tested. As surely as Pharaoh lives, you will not leave this place unless your youngest brother comes here. Send one of your number to get your brother. The rest of you will be kept in prison so that your words may be tested to see if you are telling the truth. If you are not, then as surely as Pharaoh lives, you are spies. And he put them all in custody for 3 days.
Okay, great. Thanks, Paul. So the brothers say to him, in response to the accusation that they're spies, he says, no, Lord. Look, your servants have just come to buy food. Again, authentication of the dream. Here they are. Calling themselves servants of Joseph. Verse 11. We're all sons of one man. These guys say we are honest men. Is that true?
No,
that's a lie. I mean, we're all able to be forgiven and who knows what's going on with them post, but they've done a very deceitful act and they've kept their father in deceit for 20 years.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure that's going to hold up. They say, your servants are not spies. Verse 12, yet he said to them, no, but you've come to look at the undefended parts of our land. So again, Joseph's keeping the pressure on. They respond in verse 13, hey, we were 12 in all, sons of one, we are 12 in all is what they say, sons of one man in the land of Canaan. And with regard to why 10 are only there, they explain in verse 13, the youngest is with our father, and where's the other one?
No more.
Yeah, They don't know that the other one is right in front of them. So Joseph then responds to them, I told you you were spies, so you will be tested. We need to see your youngest brother, basically, is what verse 15 says. And verse 16, one of you is going to go up and get your youngest brother, and the rest of you are going to be put in prison. And again, interestingly, the text tells us in verse 16, so that they may be tested, whether there is truth in you. So this idea of testing, I think, is probably rings true. Because really all Joseph knows about these guys is that they're liars and thieves and wicked because they sold them into slavery. So,
and you know, you said something earlier, and I never thought of it. Those brothers lived for 20 years, day after day, looking at their father, knowing they sold his son.
I know.
And they lived with that.
Yeah, kept it quiet. Family
that
secret.
That says a lot about their character.
Totally.
Really bad.
Absolutely. You're right.
I wonder whether it's the same prison that Joseph actually served in that they were thrown into.
That's a good question.
See, Joseph's name written on the side of the wall.
Joseph is here. Yeah.
That's good.
Or priest, their name's written on the wall.
Hey,
man. We're not getting all of that.
That's funny. Okay, let's read one more passage here before we close. Let's get close to 9. Could someone read verses 18 through 21? Here, I'll read it. Now Joseph said to them on the third day, do this and live, for I fear God. 19. If you are honest men, let one of your brothers be confined in your prison, but as for the rest of you, go carry grain for the famine of your households, and bring your youngest brother to me, so your words may be verified, and you will not die. And they did so. Then they said to one another, truly, we are guilty concerning our brother, because we saw the distress of his soul when he pleaded with us, yet we would not listen. Therefore, this distress has come upon us. And so 3 days these 10 guys spend in this prison, and at the end of the 3 days, Joseph lets him out in verse 18, and he says, for I fear God. Now, he doesn't use the proper name for the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He doesn't use the four-letter Yud-Heh-Vah-Heh. Otherwise, your text would be capital L, capital O, capital R, capital D. He uses the term Elohim. So it's just a generic term for God. But, you know, he may be communicating to them that we're aware of your God. And I, Joseph, may be saying, I fear him. I'm an honest guy. And verse 19, he says, if you're honest men, pick one of your guys to stay here in prison, and the rest of you can carry grain for the famine to your household. So he's going to let them take food. So really, Joseph is being a lot more generous than he started out like it was going to look. It looked like they were just going to rot in prison until one of them got Benjamin back. But now he's being gracious enough to say, y'all can go keep one here and take food back. And in verse 20, after you get food back, bring your youngest brother to me so that your words may be verified. In other words, so that I know you're not spies and you will not die. Now it goes on to say they did so. We're going to find out how this transpires. But how did these guys react in verse 21 to all of this going on? 3 days in prison, and then realize they're going to have to pick one of them to stay behind as a hostage.
They realize that they are really guilty.
Yes. They, for some reason, this all, the guilt, the 20 years,
it's just come out,
Lou, of keeping this a secret, yeah, we know that it's been wearing down on them. Yeah. And they knew probably in their hearts of hearts, at one day in time, there would be a day of reckoning. Yeah.
That's why I like verse 22. With Reuben.
Not one of them came forward to confess to their father.
No, that's what I'm saying.
All. Because they're like, because if one had come forward, they all would have been exposed.
Yeah, right.
So it was, they look at each other.
It was truly a conspiracy.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Truly a conspiracy.
Except one of them did not go along. Was it Reuben?
Yeah.
That's what he said. He was asleep.
and we'll actually see.
Reuben was away.
So, Bill, while you're in town, go ahead and pick yourself up a place to stay in the winter. Come back next Friday. We're going to talk about how, you know, Joseph sees how Reuben maybe was defending him while before he got sold. So.
Yeah.
And it's 9 o'clock.
Yeah. Wow, that went 5 minutes. 5 minutes.
And what's your friend's name?
Bill.
Bill, would you pray for us? You do.